On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we review the weekend that was the Dodgers. What in the world happened to them on Saturday night in Baltimore? We'll go beat by beat and giggle about that. Chat about the NL West race, the AL East race, the AL West race, the wild card races. Jordan and I might even race one another. Who knows? It's a wonky show. You know the deal. Lock in. Let's do it. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world planning on opening up a barbershop next to Yankee Stadium called Creative Cuts. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And none of the barbers at our shop will be able to use their right arm. It's a bit of a problem.
Well, that is going to necessitate some creativity, is what I'm hearing, as we are going to discuss whatever is going on with Aaron Judge's outfield experience. He's back out there. You can't take that away from him. But that will, of course, be one of our topics here on this Monday weekend recap edition of Baseball Barbacast. It's so good to see you, my dear friend. Happy anniversary. Jake Mintz has been married for a year to his wife, not to me. We've been doing this for much longer.
We've been married much longer.
Congratulations. How's it? We've been baseball married for a lot longer, but how's it? 1 year. Good job, dude. You're killing it.
Thanks, dude. So apparently, you know, every anniversary's got like a different material. This is something I learned recently. Like this seems like something your wonderful wife is tuned into. It was like, oh, this is, you know, 23 is zinc and like 50 is, you know, gold, whatever. One is paper. And on today's episode, we're going to try and get that. Lot to talk about from the weekend of baseball. We're going to do things a little bit differently on this episode. So usually we'll do sweeps at the top. We'll go through other interesting series in the middle. And then we'll kind of fly through everything else in turbo mode at the end. We're going to break this up into division races up at the front, wild card in the middle, and then turbo mode everything else at the back end. So if you're really itching for A's Angels chat, just skip to minute 52 and we'll tell you all about Scott Kingery's pitching appearance. But for our opener, it's going to be the NL West. The NL West has turned into a race between two people who have no interest in running. The Los Angeles Dodgers and San Diego Padres are simultaneously, over the last couple of weeks, playing with their food. Neither of them taking the initiative and making the other team sweat. Instead, it has just been an avalanche of sluggish baseball nonstop. And over the weekend, the Los Angeles Dodgers, riding an L3, rolled into the Charm City in Baltimore to take on the Orioles, who would be celebrating Cal Ripken Jr.'s 30th anniversary of tying and then breaking Lou Gehrig's record for consecutive games played. And the Dodgers showed up and immediately laid an egg. In game one, they lost on a walk-off home run hit by Samuel Basayo, the recent Oriole signed to a contract extension. That loss for the Dodgers was particularly embarrassing because Orioles starter Dean Kremer left early with an injury. And so the Orioles bullpen of like Dietrich Enns and Grant Wolfram and other dudes that you don't know kept the Dodgers quiet with just one run. Saturday, we had the Cal Ripken Jamboree, in which a cavalcade of former Orioles were at the game. Brady Anderson, Eddie Murray, and the like. Yoshinobu Yamamoto, no hitter through 8 2/3. He is allows a solo home run to Jackson Holliday, two outs in the ninth, to trim the score to 3-1. Yamamoto at that point was over around 110 pitches. Dave Robert comes and takes him out. Blake Treinen comes in, double, hit by pitch, walk. He's removed. In comes Tanner Scott, former Oriole, and on the third pitch to Emmanuel Rivera, allows a game-winning single. Orioles win 4-3 in one of the most wonky, bonkers games I can remember in a long time in the regular season. Now, the Dodgers do bounce back with a win on Sunday. Otani, two home runs off of Tomoyuki Sugano, which is like the most predictable thing of all time. But there was no way to spin it. This was an ugly weekend for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Yes, and don't worry, folks. We are going to zoom in on that Saturday loss here with an addition of sorry for your mentions in a second. But before we get to that, I mean, yeah, that Friday game, you know, I came on here on Friday morning in Pittsburgh after I watched the Dodgers get swept by the Pirates. And I said, okay, well, that was embarrassing. But you know what? The Pirates can pitch it. Not scoring against Paul Skeens, that's fine. I'm not going to get too worked up over that. But surely they'll go into Baltimore and start putting up some runs. And for that offensive showing on Friday, and then to get walked off, Tanner Scott, who had been dealing with, I mean, he has really been struggling, was bad enough. And then for Tanner Scott to get walked off again on Saturday, not a lot of pitchers getting walked off on consecutive nights. This is, of course, an Orioles team who like didn't have a walk-off win until mid-August, if I recall. Yeah. And they have two in consecutive days. By the way, you also mentioned the Cal Ripken celebration. You're mentioning all the Orioles luminaries. Dude, we had Caitlin Clark there. We had Ken Griffey Jr. there. We had all kinds of just incredible people showing up for this celebration, which for the first 8 2/3 innings, it was like, all right, well, Yoshinobu Yamamoto has stolen the show. Instead, it is an Orioles magic moment to remember.
Not to rain on that parade, you know who didn't show up was 45,971 people, which is the capacity of Camden Yards. Camden Yards was not sold out for that game. There was a longer conversation to be had about Orioles attendance and why it is down. It is the second biggest drop year over year in baseball right now, behind only the St. Louis Cardinals. Technically, the Rays have a bigger drop, but you know, they're playing in a spring training park. That was certainly odd to see. And if you rewatch the Cal ceremony, you'll notice they never pan to a shot that shows the left field second deck or third deck, the top deck, because it was pretty empty. And so I think Masson was doing a little bit of state TV action there to make sure. And that's a good thing. Like, if you're celebrating the best player in franchise history, you don't want to be like, hey, look at all these empty seats. But it is concerning, and it was a bummer. I thought the celebration was great. Obviously, it meant a lot to me. Super cool to see. I watched it with my whole family, my mom and my wife and my sister and my dad. It was great. And for 8 2/3 innings, it's an all-time that can't happen, right? It is so embarrassing. We flew Ken freaking Griffey Jr. in for this, right? You got Caitlin Clark in the building. You're like, this is what Orioles baseball is all about. And it's like, oh, my God.
Yeah, you know, it's not like, again, with respect to other Dodgers pitchers I could name that are not as good as Yamamoto. Yamamoto's awesome. You know, it happens. But
he's incredible.
Sure, it did feel like, wow. It did feel like, wow, really, this is how we're going to do this night for the Orioles.
Sure.
And instead, over the course of 20 minutes, probably not even, it felt both very fast and very long, how that rally kind of unfolded with the multiple pitchers. It became one of the most memorable regular season nights probably in Orioles history, and one of the worst regular season losses that I can really fathom. Now, again, the context is important. We understand now that the Dodgers bounce back on Sunday. We also know that because it's baseball and it's the regular season, this is the beauty of it, is that guess what? You just go back and play tomorrow and then you can just forget all about it. And so it's not necessarily a referendum on the Dodgers' chances of winning the World Series. But if you do just zoom in on just the one game and everything that went into it and the days leading up to it and the pitcher who was performing and who the pitchers who didn't perform and everything combined, it really was one of the most stunning losses I have ever seen. And it was really something special, which means we have to bring you an edition of sorry for your mentions before we kind of zoom farther out on the NL West race here. So let's get into it. The Dodgers tweet out the final score, and let's read some of our favorite replies. It is a much needed edition of sorry for your mentions. All right, Jake. Now, the Dodgers tweet out the final score. Final, Orioles 4, Dodgers 3.
And that was the score.
The amount...
this was a score.
I mean,
the other amazing thing about this game-ending tweet is that the tweet right before it, I believe, was a video of Yamamoto being taken out with the caption, like, "We're so proud of you, Yoshinobu." And then there's obviously nothing between that and final, because they're not going to tweet, like, "Blake Treinen can't find the zone." And so the juxtaposition of those two tweets was particularly great. Okay, so we got a lot of memes here in the mentions, obviously. Right off the bat, Steve Ballmer graphic, they conned me.
I mean, this is beautiful. We got Timely, of course, referencing right the Kawhi the Leonard investigation. We've gotten just like, yeah, like that's how fans of the 2025 Dodgers, who were promised 125 wins and another World Series, they feel conned. This next one, this is one I think we've gotten before, and sorry for your mentions. This one comes from Todd. Fire somebody, I don't care who, somebody needs to be held accountable for this. This always just kills me, right? Because the concept of accountability, fans are so angry that it doesn't actually matter. Of course, we have plenty of Fire Dave Roberts and DFA Tanner Scott in there. That's fine. But this guy doesn't really care who it is. He just wants someone to suffer, someone to no longer be working for the Dodgers. Or I mean, presumably it's at Dodgers. So he's talking to the Dodgers. So the Dodgers need to fire somebody. But that could be a huge range of people. And Todd doesn't care who.
It should really say fire somebody up.
That also seems to be necessary, I would say. This next one comes from Julian. We love this. $1 billion to get walked off by Emmanuel Rivera, which is just tremendous work. We love that. And yes, of course, referring to their billion-dollar off-season/off-seasons. We know they've spent a lot of money to get walked off by Emmanuel Rivera.
That is what is notable to now pull out of the – sorry for your mention. So that's what's notable about the way the Dodgers are playing. We were promised or we were – made to believe that this would be a juggernaut of sorts, that these billion-dollar Dodgers and all their incredible baseball players were going to come together and be one of the most impenetrable teams of all time. And they have not. Now, look, they're still going to be in the playoffs, and they still have, you know, a top five odds in the league of winning the World Series, something that every other team would take gladly, and many Dodgers fans, I think, would take reluctantly. But you can't review this season as anything but a disappointment unless they win it all, right? And those were the stakes heading into it, sure. But to undershoot their win total, their projected win total by like, you know, potentially 10 games, this could be the worst team of the Andrew Friedman era, simple as.
They're on pace to win like 89 games, 90 games, which is 10 games. They might be undershooting it by 15. Last tweet, we have to do this because this is also part of the rally that I did want to discuss from a Discord standpoint. this one kills me. Send Pajes to OKC until he can go bring that home run back like a major league outfielder. Okay, let's talk about this for a second, because the premise here is already preposterous, but let's dig into this, because this was something that I saw smart people responding to with the similar sentiment, which is that on the ball that Jackson Holliday hit to break up the no-hitter and put the Orioles on the board with the home run off Yoshinobu Yamamoto, there seemed to be a lot of discontent about Andy Pajes' efforts to catch it. Now, on first glance, it does look like the ball barely cleared the fence and then bounced back over, and that the ball was in the air long enough that Pajes kind of slows up at the fence and just kind of watches it go over slightly over the fence and then bounces over. Okay. Could he have possibly made a leaping attempt a la, you know, Denzel Clark or Sadon Rafaela and made one of the catches of the year? Perhaps. But people acting like this was like a can of corn is ridiculous. So, it really just speaks to how angry people are at all things Dodgers right now. It's like, you idiot, you got to go for that.
That play's got to get made. It's also a deceptive angle. It's, yes. I think, like 2 or 3 or 4 feet between the edge of the wall and where the stands start. Someone wrote about this at MLB.com. There was a gap, and you can see it from the bird's eye view shot. This is not an easy play, okay? This is not like he was camped under it and all he had to do was jump. Now, that being said, Andy Pajes would have saved himself a lot of agita and stress and criticism if he had just like, you know, if he runs into the wall and falls down, they're like, oh, Pajes left it all out there, man. Like,
Right. But instead, he's just watching and it's like, dude, come on, make an effort. It's like, jump. No, that was not... That was not the problem. It's okay. Jackson Holliday got a hold of that one. Anyway, so the Dodgers, as we mentioned, they bounce back. Ohtani homers 3 seconds into the Sunday game. That's the other thing about we have to mention about the Dodgers before we bring in the Padres into this NL West conversation is Friday. We didn't even mention this part. Friday is supposed to be Tyler Glasnow, because Glasnow was originally going to be Glasnow, Yamamoto, Kershaw, because Ohtani was pushed to Sunday when he was feeling sick in Pittsburgh when he was supposed to start on Wednesday. Then Glasnow gets scratched with back tightness, and Ohtani's like, yeah, I can pitch, no big deal. Not only does Ohtani go out there and pitch on short notice in a way that you would think would be the last person to pitch on short notice. I mean, this dude was going out there throwing absolute fuzz, and maybe it's because he had the extra couple days of rest and he was feeling better. He was up to 101. He was the sweeper was sweeping. I mean, I know he only pitched into the fourth inning, but from a stuff standpoint, that's about as good as we've seen Ohtani look. And you have to get excited about that, but it has kind of put the Dodgers pitching plans a little bit out of whack.
Well, I want to hop in here. We've been looking for signs of the Dodgers being more aggressive with decision-making now that we're getting to the sharp end of the season. Having a sick-ish Shohei Ohtani hop in and make a start on short notice is not something that they would have done multiple months ago, and in my mind is indicative of a change of behavior. I just wanted to note that.
Yeah, that's a great point. And then the other thing from a Dodgers injured list standpoint to keep an eye on is they almost ran out of catchers this weekend. So Will Smith had been nursing a bone bruise on his hand. Dalton Rushing, the rookie catcher, fouls a ball off his knee, and it has to basically leave on. He was on crutches after the game. He goes on the IL. We've got Will Smith, it sounds like, is going to be back soon, which is good. But they had to fly in Ben Rortvedt, who then almost calls a no-hitter, which is incredible. And then, you know, they have to call Chucky Robinson, who hasn't been in the big leagues in a few years. So the Dodgers catching, it seems like they're going to avoid it because it seems like Will Smith's going to be back. That was getting dicey. And then also important is that Max Muncy's coming back this week, as is Alex Vesia. So the Dodgers appear to be almost back at full strength, which is all the more reason that there is no excuse that this team might only win 90 games. All of that said, they maintain a one-game lead in the NL West because the Padres were only able to win 2 games instead of 3 against the worst team in baseball, the Colorado Rockies, this weekend. That began with the Padres getting shut out on Friday night with a Kyle Freeland masterclass. Hunter Goodman hits his 28th homer, but they bounce back. Randy Vasquez throws well on Saturday. Dylan Cease on Sunday, and the Padres put up a bunch of runs. So, all that said, the Dodgers own the tiebreak here, so it is really more than just the one-game difference. They do not play each other anymore. The Dodgers have a bunch of games coming up against the Giants. The Padres still have 4 more games against the Rockies, but as we've learned with both of these teams, those are not automatic victories, although those will be at home, so that will help for San Diego. So, again, this is the closest gap, right? We're going to talk about the AL East and AL West here in a second. This is still the closest gap. Do you still think the Padres have a chance here, or was Saturday rock bottom for the Dodgers and now they kind of take off?
I mean, losing Xander Bogaerts, we didn't really talk about this, but that's a big deal. I think Jake Cronenworth played shortstop in one of these games for the first time since 2022. That's not what you want in a postseason race. I always don't like faulting a team for only winning 2 out of 3 in a series, but the exception to that rule is the 2025 Rockies. And getting shut out in Coors Field is incredibly disappointing. When the Padres have injuries, it's even more of a concern just because of how stars and scrubs their lineup and their roster construction is. I have a bigger concern still to this point with their starting rotation. Losing Jason Adams shortens the bullpen, means the rotation needs to eat up more innings on the front end. But again, like, the Dodgers are just so uninspiring right now that this is a race between two blindfolded, you know, people.
If we want to keep doing analogies, you know, it is just two people in the doorway saying, like, no, you go.
They just keep boinking into each other.
After you.
I will say this about the Dodgers. Men in Blazers, a media operation I quite enjoy, they have a great bit about teams scoring too early, where if you score in the first 5 minutes of a game, you scored too early. And I think that that is true about baseball teams in vibe ways, where it's like the Brewers, man, they peaked too early. I think the Dodgers are valleying at the perfect time. You know, get your losses out now, right? What goes down must go up. And I think that, this is the one step back to go 10 steps forward. I mean, that's the optimistic analogy. And I'm surprised there weren't any people in the mentions being like, perfect time to get cold.
Honestly, like, I mean, sure. You'd obviously rather be losing these games now when you still have this lead, when the Padres are still failing to jump ahead. And honestly, for as frustrating as the Dodgers have been, I am still looking at just the health status of these two teams and just feel way better about the Dodgers. And we'll see where we are once we actually get to October. But as far as maintaining this lead, I know they have the smallest division lead here of the races we're going to talk about. The Padres just right now, without Michael King, without Bogarts, we're now losing Jason Adam. It's still a good pitching staff, but you're looking at a version of the Dodgers that is now almost completely healthy. And while the record does not reflect the talent that is currently on the active roster, and there are still clearly issues in the bullpen. I mean, let's be clear. There are still some concerns there. I think once we get Muncy back, once we get Edmund back, Will Smith back, at the very least, I am not worried about the lineup not being able to score. I know we've seen them look bad offensively for stretches here. It's just too much talent. I'd be way more concerned about the mound, about both the health and just the kind of, you know, reliability of the bullpen. That said, I still think the Dodgers are going to be okay because of just how much healthier they are right now.
I'd like to push back on one thing. I don't think the Padres are a good pitching staff right now. I mean, if you look at the numbers over the last couple of months, their starting pitching numbers are bad. And
I agree.
Yeah, I think they're fine. I don't think they're a catastrophe. But like, Dylan Cease has not been at his best. Randy Vasquez, it's currently Pivetta, Vasquez, Cease, Darvish. Like, Darvish is 39, guys. Like, this is, Pivetta has been incredible, and that's a great find. I just don't feel confident and comfortable with the Padres rotation. I would argue they're the worst rotation of any of the playoff teams right now. I feel comfortable saying that. And so, like, to me, it is one of the weaker links of the teams that are in playoff position right now. All right, let's move on from the West and head out East, where the Toronto Blue Jays snuck across the border to take on the New York Yankees in the Bronx. The capital of America, Yankee Stadium, for a three-game set. The Yankees entered the series, I believe, three games adrift of the Toronto Blue Jays in the American League East. And in game one, the Blue Jays threw down the gauntlet with a comfortable 7-1 win. Cam Schlittler, his worst start so far, threw like 38 pitches in the first and then like another 36 or something in the second. And it was one of those situations where he hadn't let up that many runs, but Aaron Boone went out there and was like, brother, I cannot let you throw this many pitches. You are very good and will be here for a long time. We're going to get you out of there. Blue Jays take advantage, win 7-1. We have some Aaron Judge drama that we're going to return to. For those of you who do not know, Aaron Judge has, I believe he has a flexor strain in his right elbow that has precluded him from throwing and playing the field for a long time now, I believe about a month. He comes back, plays in the outfield for the first game, has a play where he can't throw in like the first inning. There's a play at the plate where he should throw at home. Instead, he like babies it to Jazz Chisholm, who's 15 feet away, run scores. Everyone pulls their hair out. Yankees bounce back though, winning games 2 and 3. Luis Gil good in game two. They take that one 3-1. And then game three, Max Scherzer for the Blue Jays. He's tipping, still tipping. Yanks win 4-3. Ben Rice, big home run early on in that one. Max Fried bounces back from a rocky start. And the bullpen for the Yankees, good in both of these games. And the Yankees take a big series over the Blue Jays, trim that lead in the AL East to 2 games. You wouldn't know it if you listen to Yankees podcasts or follow Yankees people on the internet. Yankees have been really good since August 1st. They're 20-14. I believe that is a top three, top four record in the league over that time. Over that span, they have trimmed the gap in the AL East to make it more manageable. It is now 2 games, which feels very doable for these New York Yankees. Jordan, would you like to start big picture, or do you want to giggle about the Aaron Judge not being able to throw stuff?
Yeah, I mean, the judge thing, we kind of knew that any version of this, I guess maybe they were hoping, like, we'll just put him back out there and hopefully we won't have a play where he obviously should throw home within the first two innings. Oh, whoops, sorry, oh. That's not how baseball works. And there you are, immediately being asked to throw home. The back and forth about is because then clearly it's like, hey, dude, like, again, Aaron Judge has a good arm. So you expect him to be able to make a throw like that.
Yeah. Aaron Judge has a top five arm. If you go by throwing value and throwing out runners, like Aaron, this is a sneaky elite skill of his. And so to see him not come up and throw home was undeniably notable and a sign that he is not at 100%, something we already knew. Now, hold up. It is understandable that the Yankees would want to, as long as possible, obscure and obfuscate the fact that Judge cannot throw 100% because then you're going to have teams running on him, right? But once the cat is out of the bag, once there is a bang bang play at home plate that Aaron Judge just kind of tosses it in, everyone knows. There's no secret anymore, okay? And the Yankees trying to maintain the secret after the secret is out was one of the funnier things that I have seen from this team in a long time. Having been around the Yankees for 4 or 5 years, they hide stuff. They are very unforthcoming in describing injuries. That is like a part of the DNA of this organization as it is right now. And I think with this situation, trying to hide the fact that Judge can't throw makes tons of sense and it is the right thing to do as long as possible. But after the game, with Aaron Boone having this exchange with Chris Kirschner, the beat writer for The Athletic, saying Boone saying he's in a position to make that throw. Kirschner, why didn't he? We're handling it how we handle it, okay? Like that, we know now. Then they go to Judge. This is via Gary Phillips. And Judge his brain cannot function in a way where he's saying, no, my arm hurts, I can't throw. Instead, he says, what happened on the two-run single in the first inning? Judge, which one are you talking about? Brother, the one where you couldn't throw. Judge, just drop the ball in, throw it to the cutoff man. It's a two-run single. One of you, what do you mean? Are you capable of making that throw home? Quote, I wouldn't be in the outfield if I wasn't able to make that throw. So how come it didn't happen there? Judge, get it in. Get it to the cutoff man. Let him do his thing. Like, Aaron Judge loves being like, yeah, we're just passing the baton. Next man up. We're a great team. Everyone believes in each other. And him framing an inability to throw a baseball by being like, you know, Jazz is a great player. I wanted to get the ball in his hands and let him make a play. It's like, that's not how the sport works, Aaron Judge. Good try, though.
Well, and we need to get back to your joke to open the pod, which is that they ask Aaron Boone, like, dude, what's going on? And he's like, yo, well, we've been working on, quote, creative cuts to accommodate, basically, Aaron Judge's inability to make this throw. And creative cuts is an amazing thing. And like, is this what he's referring to? Just Jazz running an extra few feet out so that Aaron Judge can just kind of lob it to him? Like, what are we talking about here? Because either he can throw that or he can't. It's not.
So let me. This is. I want to defend the Yankees.
You can't tell us that this is some bold, brilliant strategy. Like, okay,
we're breaking the game.
If he can't, if you're deciding he can't fully throw, but it's still in our best interest for him to be out there because of his range. I know he made a diving play over the weekend too. That's fine. You can make that case. That's okay. You could do that, but just say that. Stop acting like we're not.
We're not
watching
dumb.
The same sport. Yeah, that's. What's
I mean,
so
maybe.
Silly.
I am dumb, but I'm not that dumb. Look, and this is the last thing I'll say. The Yankees' strategic approach here is correct. This is what they should be doing, okay? The value of having Aaron Judge run around out there instead of Giancarlo Stanton, even if he can't pick up and throw a baseball, it makes more sense. It looks weird as hell, and it's embarrassing, and it's bizarre, but it is the right strategic move to get both of them in the lineup and to have Judge be able to track down balls. He made a huge catch to save a run in Sunday's game. Like, this is a good thing. Just say, hey, we're limited with what we have now, and we think this is the best thing for the ball club. Don't hit me with creative cuts as if all the media members aren't watching your team every day. It's just very condescending.
Yeah. Now, last thing on this, and then we'll touch on the Blue Jays, move to the AL West, is we can continue to laugh about this, but, I mean, undeniably, this will remain a thing. And maybe they are hoping that he's good enough to run it, to go out there now and do his creative cuts and, you know, track down some balls with more range. That's great. But until we see Aaron Judge, you know, really let one loose, this is going to be something we are thinking about in close Yankees games for the rest of the season, indisputably. So, at some point it won't be as funny as much as it is just like, wow, what a very weird specific challenge that they are dealing with. And of course, we want Aaron Judge to stay healthy so we can watch him hitting all these things. But this is not a great start to this plan and experiment. I'm not saying it's the wrong decision based on the pros and cons, but it is something this is not the end of this story by any stretch. No matter how the Yankees want to talk about it and pretend like it isn't actually happening, this is just the beginning of this until we see Aaron Judge really let one loose.
But the other thing is that I disagree. I think that this worked out fine. Yes, they took a couple extra bases, but there was also a play that Stanton doesn't make on Sunday. And I think the Yankees should just say that. Like,
we're just going to keep going back and forth on those because that's the thing. We'll have plays of each and we're going to have to end up. I don't know. I mean, at the end of the season, people will be able to be like, all right, it was worth it. Aaron Judge made these plays and didn't make these plays. Who knows? And then at some point, maybe he is just throwing the ball and we're not thinking about it anymore.
Sure. But what tips the scales here is making sure Stanton's body doesn't fall apart. That's the other thing, right? It's not simply the plays that Judge makes, the plays that Stanton makes. Yep. It's every second that you have Giancarlo Stanton in the grass. Like, he should never, Giancarlo Stanton's feet should never be touching grass, except if he's walking from the dugout to the batter's box. Okay? It's that simple. Every second his feet are on the grass, like, we are risking calamity at all times. And so I think that is an important part of the story. Let's wrap this up here.
That's totally valid. Last thing on the AL East, again, Blue Jays still two games up. Even winning one here, that's fine. I think what the Yankees have shown here, winning series against the Astros and Blue Jays, it's like, okay, no, we can beat decent teams. Okay. Don't just say we're beating up on the bottom feeders here. This run continues though. They have Detroit and Boston coming up. Then it really eases up. All of that is to say, this is still very winnable for the Yankees. Okay. This is not necessarily a vote of no confidence for the Blue Jays. I feel very strongly that Aaron Boone is going to say this multiple times over the next few weeks. And in this case, he's absolutely going to be correct, which is that the opportunity to win this division is still very much in play for the New York Yankees. The Blue Jays have been in first place since July 3rd. Their biggest lead was 6.5 games. They are going to have to earn this now. Blue Jays' schedule is a little bit tougher. But if the Yankees can get through these Tigers and Red Sox series, even holding steady, they could be able to beat up on Minnesota and Baltimore down the stretch here. So we'll see. This division race is not over whatsoever. In fact, I think the Yankees have a better chance than the Padres. I think I feel pretty good about that. All right, we're going to take a break. When we return, we have one more division race to hit on, which is the AL West, and then we'll do the wild card. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbecue. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. One more division race is this still a division race? I think we have to say so. The Houston Astros are 2.5 games up on the Seattle Mariners with 3 weeks to go. Yeah. The Astros have been in first place or tied for first place every day since June 3rd. Their biggest lead was 7 games. And though the Astros have also been playing rather poorly lately, not as poor as the Mariners. But that changed over the weekend as the Mariners finally gained some ground with a series win in Atlanta and the Astros dropping a series to the Texas Rangers. Let's talk about the showdown in Texas first, as the Astros and Rangers played a truly miserable baseball game on Friday night in which they combined to go 3-for-28 with runners in scoring position. Rangers walking it off in the 12th inning against Lance McCullers, who's in the bullpen now. Yuck. That was a brutal watch. Yeah, I'm sure Lance had a great time there. Hunter Brown bounces back on. He's like, guys, that was embarrassing. We're not doing this again. Jacob deGrom was not awesome. 3 more Yordan hits. including a homer off DeGrom. Astros win 11-0. That was a Rangers. It's like, oh my God, this team's not very good. But then here comes Patrick Corbin. Another solid Patrick Corbin start. Jake Berger hits a huge home run off Framber Valdez, who I believe did not have any viral cross-ups during this outing. I think Framber went 7 innings, but the Astros offense was quiet. And the Rangers win 4-2. Meanwhile, in Atlanta, the Mariners, they reached their rock bottom with a pitiful offensive performance on Friday night. Now, they were facing Chris Sale, which anyone who has to face Chris Sale at this point in September, like, that's just a tough bounce. Because this Braves season is so over. And Chris Sale was injured, and he has come back for some reason and continues to look like one of the best pitchers in the league. And so that's a tough bounce for Seattle. But they're
where's Eric Fetty?
Of course. Yeah, come on. Can we get some of these? Well, can we get the pitchers that we see the next couple days for Atlanta? Now, on Saturday, Hurston Waldrop, this has been another bright spot for the Braves in the second half. He has been good, and I'm excited to kind of watch him progress in this rotation. But the Braves bullpen was just a catastrophic performance. The Mariners offense explodes in the late innings. We get two Julio homers. Geno goes yard. Raleigh hits his 52nd home run. Mariners win 10-2. And they were just getting started because you know what this team needed, Jake? Roku Sunday morning leadoff. First game of the day on Sunday. Oh, is it the last one of the year?
There's a chance that we just witnessed history. The last Roku Sunday morning leadoff of the year and maybe of the ever. And Jordan, I have to tell you something. I was at my parents' house. I was the series finale of Roku morning leadoff. I was at my parents' house, okay, for this. And they have Roku. And I sat down on the couch yesterday and I was like scrolling through Roku and I was like, I'm going to put on MLB TV. And I said, no. I'm going to watch this game the way this should be watched, direct on Roku. And I did. And it felt like a beautiful goodbye. It was the goodbye I needed to Sunday morning Roku leadoff.
Yes. Now, as for where this one will rank in the pantheon of series finales, Spencer Strider getting scratched and Joey Wentz giving up a billion runs is probably not what Roku envisioned when they wanted to, you know, send off this great product. All that said, the Mariners will happily take it as their offense gets even hotter on Sunday. 18 runs on 20 hits, only two of which came against noted position player pitcher Vidal Brujan. Two more Suarez homers. Cal Raleigh hits his 53rd. Naylor and Polanco go yard. Mariners win 18-2. So, this is kind of Scorigami. What the Mariners really needed from a cathartic offensive standpoint. Like, this was, yes, cathartic is the word against pitchers that they should be beating up. This was good. And the starting pitching, while in Tampa was disappointing, was good in Cleveland, and it was pretty good in Atlanta. So that's also encouraging for sure. Luis Castillo looked much better. All that said, the Mariners are still going to have to earn this. Now, they do still have 3 games in Houston remaining in a few weeks, September 19th to the 21st. You could certainly circle that. But what will the gap be at that stage is really the question. Are the Astros going to remain in striking distance? Because Houston has also been very inconsistent, but they are starting to get reasonably healthier. And the Mariners, while, you know, schedule wise, both of these teams have, it's, you know, Seattle's schedule looks easier on paper because they still have the Rockies and the Angels left. But Houston, you know, Houston's also got some games against the A's and the Braves and the Angels as well. So, I mean, again, I think it's the least likely of these three division races that we've talked about. But the Mariners at least starting to look more like the best version of themselves, reminding us that even against mediocre pitching, they should be able to score a bunch of runs. And if the starting pitching, which has been disappointing recently, can get back on track, I think at the very least, they should be able to play well enough to not sweat too much to get into the postseason, which it certainly was looking like they might be as we talk about the wild card races here in a second. But before we get to that, anything on the AL West?
The Mariners played like a tuna sandwich left in an eighth grader's locker for 2 months. You know, like they, it's just smelly, bad. 6 and 15 in their last 21 games heading into Saturday before they took those last two. And yet here they are with just 2.5 games between them and the Astros. Jordan, I've had a rough go of it recently here in DC. As you know, I got a couple of my bikes stolen. Someone broke into my garage and took them. And, you know, it's been really tough and it's been a bummer. And then I woke up this morning and I look at my life. I'm like, I still like my life. Like, I'm happy. I have a beautiful wife. It's my anniversary. I get to do this for a living. It's nice outside. I get to talk to you. And things are still generally pretty good. And that is the Mariners. You know, that is the Mariners. You wake up and you're like, actually, things aren't that bad.
You know what? You know what? This could still be okay. And yeah, it's like you hope, same with the Dodgers and some of these other teams, you hope that you hit rock bottom at the beginning of September instead of the end of September. That's really the way you have to look at it. And I think, as you know, Aaron Boone will tell them the same thing too. It's right in front of them. They have the opportunity. All right. But
ask Aaron Boone. Hey, Aaron, what do you think of the Mariners? It's right in front of them.
It's right in front of them.
What about the Pirates? Way behind them.
How many teams? Way, yeah. That's, I can't even see them. They're so far behind us. Okay. Let us open this up a little bit more. Let's go around the league.
Let's start in the National League, which is significantly less interesting. Chicago Cubs, 5 games up on the New York Mets. This is always confusing to like explain in audio form. I mean, I'm going to try again. Chicago, first wild card, 3-game gap. San Diego, 2-game gap. Mets in the third spot. 4 games separate the Mets from the Reds and the Giants. Half game down, Diamondbacks, Cardinals. The interesting thing about this is the Reds, Giants, Diamondbacks, Cardinals all being close together to get the fourth place medal, which doesn't exist.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll start with, you know, we had multiple series between some of these teams this weekend, including the Reds welcoming the Mets for 3 games. And on Friday, we said, okay, Reds, listen, if you can't win this series, we're definitely done talking about you. And when the Reds load the bases with nobody out, down by one against Edwin Diaz in the bottom of the ninth against the Mets on Friday night and can't score, that was kind of like, all right, Reds, it's been a nice season. There is no way we are taking you seriously.
Go Bengals.
At any point for the rest of the year. Now, credit to them. They bounce back and win the next 2 games. Brady Singer looks very good on Saturday. Hunter Green was spectacular. A nice reminder that they do have a superstar pitcher in Hunter Green. 12 strikeouts, only 1 hit allowed on Sunday. Sal Stewart hits his first homer of his career on Saturday against Jonah Tong, who kind of struggled with his command. He does go 6 innings, but allows 3 homers. And, you know, Juan Soto hits a homer in the ninth on Sunday, but that comeback falls short. But this has been the Reds the whole season, right? They weren't swept until like 2 weeks ago. They've never fallen quite out of it, but they've never gotten hot enough for us to take them seriously. And honestly, this is what this series was, where the stink of that Friday loss made me not care about the next 2 wins. You know, even if you had just lost, almost if you'd lost it in a more normal fashion, because you're just thinking like, wow, well then why wasn't this a sweep if you could just score a run like a normal team would on a Friday night with bases loaded, nobody outs, down by one. So missed opportunity once again. Even if they had won that, they still would have been 3 games back. But it just feels like once again with Cincinnati, like, come on. Come on, if you're gonna do this, like actually make me really seize my attention instead of giving me more reason to be disappointed.
My takeaway from this weekend was more Mets focused, where the only way the NL wildcard race becomes interesting is if the Mets bungle it. That gap is big enough where the Mets have to lose this. Whereas I think in the American League, where it is Mariners in the third spot, 1.5 games, Royals at 2, Gardo's at 2.5, Rays at 4. Like, I think the Rangers could win it. Like, the Mariners could play well over the last 2 weeks, and the Rangers could just play a game and a half better, right? And you would look back and be like, man, the Mariners kind of blew it. But in some ways, they did it. That will still be the conversation. I understand that. But I just think that, like, the Mariners can lose the wild card spot without having a catastrophic record in the last couple of weeks. The Mets need to be a dumpster fire in order
I think
to fall out.
if you zoom in right now, look forward, I think that's fair. I think you could also just argue that the Mariners have already blown it to even be in this position for the Rangers or the Royals to catch them. But I think that that is a fair point from this point forward. That said, quickly, also on the National League, while we, you know, stay in the wild card, so the Cardinals take 2 out of 3 over the Giants. This was a very similar kind of thing. The Giants had been suddenly playing extremely well over the last few weeks. And even though they were still on the fringes, you were like, okay, wait a minute. There is talent on this roster. Maybe they can make a push if the Mets want to bungle it. They win 8-2 on Friday. We get Devers and Adames home runs. And all Ryan Walker needs to do is close it out on Saturday after an awesome Justin Verlander start. And he can't get an out. Cardinals come back to rally. They walk it off and they win again on Sunday. And it's the same kind of thing where it was the Giants. It was like, I think they had won 8 of 10 going into the weekend. It was right there. And instead they were like, right, nope, in front of them. We are magnetically tethered to 500. That is where we belong. That is where the Mets, or that is where the Reds and Giants both seem to be heading towards. And just an immensely disappointing showing when it felt like the Giants were finally starting to play at their best. So again, like you said, they remain 4 games back and do not feel especially relevant. And then the other one is we cross over into the American League. We had an interleague series between the Diamondbacks and the Red Sox. Now, the Red Sox in a little bit more comfortable position in the American League wild card with a 3.5-game cushion over the Mariners through the end of the weekend. The Diamondbacks also still floating around 500. They have also played better, and they win the first 2 games of this series. We have Eduardo Rodriguez pitching well against his former team. We have Peyton Tolley really struggling in his, his second start, right? Just his second career start. So D-backs win 10-5 on Friday. They win 5-1 on Saturday. And then the Red Sox do bounce back with a much-needed win on Sunday. Not necessarily as much because their spot in the standings was threatened. But again, you don't want to be, you know, falling into this kind of way, especially on the road against a team you should be much better at. They do win on Sunday. So the Diamondbacks, even with this series win, they are also at 500. They are also 4.5 back. But they, as they showed again on Sunday, they just don't have the pitching, especially in the bullpen, to really hang late in these games, to really trust that they're going to get those laid outs, with all due respect to Taylor Rashi. And so the Red Sox do salvage on Sunday. The one Red Sox note before we go to the rest of the AL, I mean, Aroldis Chapman has been unbelievable. Obviously, this is not someone people enjoy rooting for many understandable reasons. But the fact that this guy is essentially having one of his best seasons ever at age 38 is a reminder that this is a generational talent. He's one of the most incredible pitchers you've ever seen. He hasn't allowed a hit in 50 consecutive batters faced. That is 17 straight appearances without allowing a hit. Last hit allowed was JT Realmuto home run on July 23rd. Now, again, the rest of the Red Sox bullpen is still not awesome for sure. So it's going to be a big question as we move forward with them is like, how much are you going to ask of Chapman? Are they going to start asking for 6 outs from Chapman? And his, you know, control can still be shaky at times, but he has become, one of the best relievers in baseball again, which shouldn't be that surprising because he has been that for a long time. But man, oh man, he's really on one right now.
The postseason home run that he allows
that he
is going to heading for hit it. Very well. Yep. Where that blank Chapman stare into the nothing, we've seen it. I guess he's done that 3 times, if I remember correctly, right?
They're three memorable ones off the top of my
Rajai
head, which
Altuve,
is Mike Brasso, which is, I think, my favorite. Still one of my favorite ones in 2020. So, yeah, he can still give him up.
We're not big gamblers. Take your pick. Who hits the back-breaking home run off Aroldis Chapman in the playoffs that causes him to stare into the distance?
I mean, again, if we're going right now, we might be heading for a Red Sox-Yankees wildcard series. I mean, like, again, expecting it to be a lefty feels basically just stupid. So, like, Trent Grisham feels like the right answer, but that also would be an unbelievable feat,
Volpe,
considering it is
Volpe.
Almost always. Oh, Volpe.
Oh.
Volpe. Volpe. Yeah, I think that's the answer. I think you're right. I think it's Volpe. I think it is Volpe. All right. Well, we can look forward to that. Anyway.
Paul Goldschmidt.
Yeah. Paul Goldschmidt. That matchup wise, that is absolutely the correct answer. So I could definitely see that. Anyway, Red Sox still in fairly good position in the American League wild card. Beyond that, we had the Royals taking 2 of 3 over Minnesota. We had the Guardians taking 3 of 4 over the Rays. Now, Cleveland leapfrogs Tampa Bay. They are still, I mean, this is just incredible. It really speaks to how goofy this season has been. So if they take 3 of 4 from Tampa, but even winning that series, the Guardians still have a minus 48 run differential, Rays plus 55. So think about that gap from a Pythag standpoint, the difference between those two teams. Cleveland now sits 2.5 back of Seattle. The Rangers, who we mentioned won that series against the Astros, 1.5 back. Royals, 2 back. Rays still 4 back with the, I guess, second best run differential behind Texas. Kansas City, this is another missed opportunity. You're playing a Twins team that could not be more downtrodden, and they are unable to sweep Rock them bottom on Sunday after dominating them over those first two games. But that's kind of how that's where we're at with all these wildcard teams in both leagues. It's just like, yeah, they're not good enough to actually do what they need to and sweep and really push themselves back into it. That's true with Texas getting, you know, crushed by Houston on Saturday. That's true with Kansas City not sweeping the Twins. That's true with even Cleveland, you know, not being able to sweep the Rays, even though they came close there. So I don't know. Cleveland now, by the way, setting up this week, has 4 against Kansas City, which I will be in attendance for some of. Fun. So I'm looking forward to
seeing
that.
They're going to split. We're not going to learn anything.
But if they split, we might not learn anything, and neither team will make any progress. So that's kind of where we're at with these wildcard teams. But anything else, big picture, if there is a team that has your attention of this group, is it still Texas? I mean, that would be a reasonable answer.
Still Kansas City. It's Kansas City.
Still Kansas City. Okay. Okay.
Cole Reagans, I believe, made a rehab appearance. He's going to be back, I think, soon, which would be a great shot in the arm for them. What I really want is an MLB NIT for these 8 teams out of the wildcard picture. Reds, Giants, Diamondbacks, Cardinals, Rangers, Royals, Guardians, Rays. Let's play it in November. Low stakes. Mm. You know, who says no? All the teams.
All the players say, please, absolutely not. That sounds like a
Let
terrible
me nap.
Idea. All right. We're going to take a break. When we return, Brewers fans, don't worry. We'll talk about you. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. We saved it for the third block. Sorry, Brewers fans, but now it's time to give you some love. How sweep it is.
Clean up, everybody.
There is no shame in getting swept. I never got swept. You guys got swept.
Quinn Priester.
He wins again, Jake Mintz. This is one heck of a streak. Our guy, Quinn Priester, who may or may not know of this stupid video we keep referencing, where Jake and I were rapping his name for some reason.
Quinn Priester,
since joining the Brewers very early on this season, has been simply spectacular. And on Friday, he went another 7 innings against the Pittsburgh Pirates as they win 5-2. And this was a franchise record, the 11th consecutive decision falling in Quinn Priester's favor. Brewers have now won 17 consecutive games started by Quinn Priester. Funny enough, the last time they lost a game started by Quinn Priester was also in Pittsburgh, way back on May 24th, when Quinn Priester was awesome. 6 innings, 1 run, and ultimately they ended up losing that game 2-1. But this has been arguably the best midseason addition, and it's not really midseason because they got him really early on, of any player in the league. Like, I don't really know how hyperbolic that is, but that is what he has been. That is the stabilizing force that he has become for this Brewers rotation. It is, he has put himself in position to be like, yeah, obviously Quinn Priester is going to start a playoff game. Now, is that true? It seems weird considering they've been undefeated basically when he's been pitching. But we still have, of course, Freddy Peralta, who's making a push for runner-up to Paul Skenes in the Cy Young. We have Brandon Woodruff, who has looked great. We have Jacob Mizorowski, who went a career-high 7 innings on Sunday. And so the Brewers have a lot of options here. But regardless, what Quinn Priester has become, which is essentially the durable, sinker-balling, innings-munching, mid-rotation anchor that many scouts thought he could be when he was drafted out of high school by those Pirates back in 2019, is really tremendous. And whether or not he gets the ball for a postseason start, he has been a massive part of their push to the best record in baseball, and we got to give him some love.
I find this hard to believe. You know, he's the only Quinn to ever pitch a game in MLB history, and only the second Quinn.
Wow. No, I didn't know that was such a modern name as a first name, I guess.
Yeah. Super bizarre. I mean, Roman Quinn, last name. There's some last name Quinns. But there's only one other Quinn, Quinn Mack, a left fielder who appeared in 5 games for the 1994 Mariners. That's it. Those are the Quinns. He's Quinn. We could stop calling him Quinn Priester and just start calling him Quinn, like Shohei or Jock.
Yeah. He earned it. He's at this point. I mean, it's going to take a while for another Quinn to come along and be any better than this. So you got to give him some credit. But yeah, like I said, I don't know how this and Jose Quintana, didn't even mention him. Like, the Brewers are going to have a lot of options here, which is better than we could say for them in recent years. That's for sure. And so in that case, we're going to feel a little bit better about them going into the postseason, which, again, is expecting them to get a bye. They are going to be able to line this up exactly as they want. So how they choose to do that, and we'll see who's healthy once we get there, because that's still a something they have to navigate in the coming weeks. And they are dealing with some injuries right now in the bullpen, which is really McGill, and now Nick Mears goes down. Christian Yelich has not played in a few days, dealing with a back injury. So, you know, there's some things to monitor with Milwaukee here, but they still have such a big cushion that they are certainly the safest bet to get the top seed. And what they do with that is going to be interesting.
Can't spell Quinn Priester without Win.
Quinn, right. That's true. We should change the spelling of his name to
Win.
Q-W-I-N. That would be good. Last thing on this series before we move on. Pirates, not awesome. You sweep the Dodgers and then you get your ass kicked by Milwaukee. But that's whatever. Who cares?
Whatever.
Bubba Chandler, speaking of tipping, Bubba Chandler might be tipping because he's getting absolutely destroyed right now. And
tipping culture is out of control.
Yes. Oh, that's what I've been saying. And I don't think Bubba Chandler is a true talent. Give up 9 runs in 2 2/3 innings, with all due respect to the Milwaukee Brewers. But hey, Pirates fans, I will say this. I went to the Roberto Clemente Museum for the first time on Friday. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. I can't recommend it enough. Long overdue that I had not been there before. And I'm drinking out of my Clemente Museum mug today, and that place is awesome. There is so much cool stuff there, and like they have more stuff planned. I spoke to the owner, Dwayne Reeder, who was incredible. They have a lot of cool stuff planned coming up. I know they have a big fundraiser coming up next Saturday, I believe, that should get a lot of attention. So shouts out to that museum and that foundation and everything involving Roberto Clemente, because I learned a lot and I really enjoyed it.
Love a museum. Big museum guy.
Absolutely. All right, Jake, 4 series left. Let's go fast.
Faster than fast, quicker than quick. I am lightning.
I feel the need for speed.
It's turbo time.
Phillies taking 2 out of 3 over the Marlins in Miami. This series included the home run robbery heard around the world with, you've seen this if you're listening to this show. Home run ball. There's a scramble for it. Guy takes it, gives it to his kid. Woman walks over, yells at him, takes the ball back, turns into a discourse about the American social experience. Couple quick thoughts. Give it to a kid. Just always give it to a kid, a baseball. If you, any baseball you have lying around, like I have a couple behind me here, I should go give them to kids. The joy of a kid getting a ball is always bigger. Just give it to a kid. This woman was wrong. She shouldn't have screamed. The dad was clearly taken aback, and don't blame that guy. I mean, it's a weird situation. No one knows how they would prep for it. One plus here, we get a new highlight that'll get aggregated by non-baseball accounts on Twitter forever. It'll be like, we're going to see this one.
So glad.
It'll be like, can you believe this? Question mark from, you know, like Pop Crave or whatever. Like, how dare she?
This is how I want our sports to be presented. It's good.
Legitimate argument. This is the most viewed clip of the 2025 MLB season.
God, I hope not. Yeah, I don't like this. We don't have to talk about this. It is amazing the degree to which people respond to this. It's always amazing to me what things just burst through into the mainstream to become the thing that people are talking about. And this was one of them. And I certainly can't defend this woman, but boy, are people angry. I think we could probably just be like, wow, that was embarrassing. Probably shouldn't have done that. And then move on with our day. But that is not how people responded.
Hey, well, you did. I didn't like that you did that.
Responded.
Don't do that again.
More important to the baseball that is being to played. Us. Trey Turner's injured. That's not good.
Yeah.
That's a lot worse than whatever this Phillies fan did. Trey Turner is been unbelievable. And honestly, like Trey Turner having a hamstring strain, which might keep him out for 10 days, might keep him out for 6 weeks. We don't know. There's a big range of these. We will probably know more maybe by the time you're listening to this. But this spooks me more off of my Phillies World Series pick than Zach Wheeler by a lot, to be honest. Now, we don't know how long he's going to be missing, but this is the cascading effect from this is much more troubling than Zach Wheeler being out. Obviously, Zach Wheeler is a huge deal. This is not to discount how important he is. But considering this roster and considering the pros and cons of this roster, that is where I am at. Now, again, maybe he misses 10 days and we're not thinking about it by the time October's here. But if he is actually out for the rest of the month, let alone into October, I am officially worried about the Phillies scoring runs.
This is not the leg where he had a hamstring issue last year and missed 6 weeks. It is the other leg. Whether that is a good thing or a bad thing,
or worse.
You decide. Turner is having a splendid, historically good bounce back defensive season. I do think Edmundo Sosa is underrated defensively at shortstop and can help fill that void. The big thing, though, is Turner is making a lot of contact at the top of the lineup and getting on base and playing in a way that a lot of other Phillies hitters don't, and removing him from that is why there is real concern here. I'm sure we'll know more by the time you're listening to this. I'm headed up to Philly this week for the 4-game set with the Mets, so I will be reporting on that on Wednesday. White Sox, who are sneaky fun right now, take 2 out of 3 over the Tigers. Colson Montgomery hits his 18th home run of the season. He's been up for 75 minutes. Jack Flaherty, bad. White Sox take the opener. Skubal, incredible. Game 2, 7 scoreless. White Sox come back and win game 3. Lenin Sosa, titanic home run, 451 feet, his 20th of the season. Never underrate the reality that there is a major leaguer named Lenin, effectively.
Dude, I love this guy. He is truly one of my favorite players. I've been meaning to tweet about him for a while. Yes, the name is amazing, but longest tenured White Sox. He signed in 2016, and he's still in his org, like thriving. It's incredible. He's been with them forever. So I love Lenin Sosa. But anyway, yeah, Tigers, without Skubal, they really would have had a tough weekend. But good thing they have him. And yes, the Will Robertson home run robbery was a great – that has to be – home run robbery is a great way to like to get your name out there in a way that like nobody had ever had seen this name before. This dude's been bouncing around a couple teams and he's late round pick. Nobody knows who he is. That is now okay. People will know. All right. Well, if I know anything about Will Robertson, it's that he made that catch.
Watching this play for me is like when you see someone that you've met before, but you don't remember their name and you're like, what's up? Hey, you. What's up, pal? And this is like, what a catch by him.
Wow, that left fielder really can jump. Whew. What a play. Anyway, two more. White Sox are fun right now. I'm enjoying watching them. The Nationals take 2 out of 3 over the Chicago Cubs. Cubbies, not great. I know we're not, it's not like we're pretending like you're catching the Brewers at all, but this was still not an awesome weekend for them. They win on Friday with a bunch of homers, but then the offense really goes quiet over the next couple days against pitchers that are not usually getting a lot of outs. Nats win 2-1 on Saturday, 6-3 on Sunday. Daniel Palencia, one of the breakout stars in the bullpen for them, cannot record an out as the Nats hit 2 homers against him, and he leaves with shoulder tightness. That is very ominous for the Cubs, who were already dealing with minor injuries to Kyle Tucker and PCA. PCA, who fouled the ball off his knee. Kyle Tucker, I believe, dealing with a calf issue. So not an awesome weekend for the Cubs. Again, because they have the cushion at the top of the wild card, because we're no longer pretending they can catch the Brewers, they're kind of just floating along, and we just assume they'll have that top wild card spot. But, you know, at the very least, you want to get it to October healthy, and this wasn't an awesome weekend from that perspective.
Whoa, Cubs, whoa. Also an update here for James Wood, who has his sights set on the all-time single-season home run record, or in his case, avoiding it. 5 more punch-outs over the weekend for James Wood.
You said home run record, which maybe he will also do someday, but strikeout record, to be clear.
Strikeout record? I like the idea that James Wood is going for Barry Bonds' 73, and we waited until this point to talk about it. No, Jordan is correct. He is going for the single-season strikeout record, which is Mark Reynolds at 223. 5 more Ks across 3 games for him over the weekend. He is now up to 193 strikeouts on the year. 30 more to tie the record in 20 games left. For you mathematicians out there, that is 1.5 strikeouts per game. Okay, that feels doable to me. He is at 1.38 strikeouts per game right now. So he would not need to go past his average too much in order to do that. I will say, however, there's a double header in there. I don't know if they'll play both ends of that.
Okay, that said, I do wonder. This is so
they sit him.
It's like, well, this is what I'm saying. Is it gonna be like the reverse batting title situation where it's like, nah, I'm not playing that last game. I'm qualified. I gotta keep my batting average where it is, where it's like he's 3 away from passing.
Oh, my
Reynolds,
oblique.
And they're like, I don't think so. James Wood, if you're listening, here's my advice. Don't worry about it. Because as far as ARB goes and like contract extensions, you'd rather get more home runs than not get more strikeouts. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. So I think he's going to stay in there and keep, you know, he could get to 30 homers, right? So
yeah, and I believe he's got that Papa John's
like,
money.
Unbelievable season. James Wood, awesome. Yeah. Love he's James awesome. Wood. Very few players I'd rather build around than James Wood. But I think this is totally in play. We're going to be talking about this in the final week.
100%. And then A's over the Angels is our last series. A lot of homers here. A's win 10-4 on Friday, kick the crap out of the Angels 17-4. Scott Kingery allows 8 runs in 2 innings as a position player pitching late in that game. Adele hits his 35th home run of the year. Amazing year for him. Kenley Jansen gets career save number 473. The Angels take the last one. I've joked on the show before about MLB.com's spin doctor headline game where a team will have an embarrassing loss and MLB.com's headline writers will make it sound like everything's okay. All-timer here. Yusei Kikuchi got obliterated on Saturday against the A's, and the headline on Angels.com was Kikuchi reaches 1,000 career strikeouts in Rocky outing.
That is very funny. Did you see this from Sam Blum? So Angels clearly running out of pitching, right? In AAA,
yeah, position players pitching in AAA.
In AAA Salt Lake, not only do they have position players pitching, they ran out of pitching by the Sunday game, the last game of the series, that they had Yolmer Sanchez come in with a 1-run 9th inning lead to try and close out a 6-5 victory. And he didn't.
You know what's funny about this?
He gave up 5 runs. Yeah.
I could talk about this forever. There's 2 things quickly. One, this is bad because it is cheap. You can go sign human beings to pitch and play Major League Baseball games to fill in and maybe they become good. Like, this is an embarrassment and the Angels should just be signing the Rob Kaminskis of the world. No shade towards friend of the pod, Rob Kaminski.
Whatever. There's a plenty of pitchers.
there are dudes like that that will go and throw innings for you who are looking for gigs. Like, go sign them. This is an embarrassment. Second thing is, this is the team that drafted only pitchers in 2021, and they don't have any pitchers it's in AAA. So true. That's all I have to say
it's
about
so
that.
True. Oh my God.
It's so bad, dude. Oh my God. It's so bad. It's all right, before point. We get out of here, before we get out of here, one more thing. Rest in peace to Davey Johnson, who passed away over the weekend. Legendary baseball character. Won a World Series with the Orioles as a player. 1966 and 1970, four-time All-Star. Had a, I believe, 43-homer season as a second baseman in 1973 for the Atlanta Braves. Pretty sick. Went over to Japan, played for the Yomiuri Giants. Then he gets into managing. 33 on the all-time managerial list with a .562 winning percentage. Manages the 1986 Mets. Wins a World Series. Managed the Nationals when they first got good. Was running the Orioles in 97 and 98 when they made the playoffs. Like, kind of a legendary, just a legendary dude. Was Bryce Harper's first manager when the Nats first got good in 2012. Thoughts go out to him and his family. Jim Palmer spoke about Davey before the broadcast started on Sunday. Palmer, who played with Davey on those Orioles teams. If you want to know more about Davey Johnson, highly recommend going back and watching what Jim had to say. Really good insight from the Hall of Famer.
Well said. Yes, clearly someone that when you are a baseball lifer like that, you impact a lot of different organizations. And he is a primo example of someone who means a lot to certainly Baltimore. And then obviously, if you're part of the 86 Mets, you are going to be remembered forever.
And the other thing. Two other quick things about Davey Johnson. Kind of a really important figure in terms of the history of baseball for sabermetrics. He was an early adopter of just using stats. Like, you know, like taking advanced information and applying that. And then, you know, seemed like a really special dude. If you, Bryce Harper was really kind of broken up about this, understandably so, his first manager. Davey loved younger players. I never got the chance to interact with him. I'm not sure you did either. You take a look at the all-time wins list, okay? The dudes on the wins list that are ahead of him, I believe there is nobody ahead of him with more wins that has a higher winning percentage that is not in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. Bruce Bochy, future Hall of Famer, and Dusty Baker, future Hall of Famer removed. So, you know, this often happens. You review someone's legacy once they pass away. Davey Johnson, .562 winning percentage, 33rd on the all-time list, has a World Series ring. Everybody ahead of him on this list is a Hall of Famer who has similar credentials.
Yeah. And of course, sadly, he's passed away. So if he ever ends up on a Veterans Era, you know, committee ballot for the actual Cooperstown, you know, maybe he will be able to have that honor and his family will be able to celebrate it. I think it would probably be well deserved. All right, that's it. We're done. Thank you all for listening to this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and TJ Brassel for producing. As always, we will be back on Wednesday as the regular season is winding down, folks. Oh boy, only about 18, 19 games to go before October. Let's have some fun. We'll talk to you later this week. Bye-bye.